Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Monday and you're listening to Offbeat Tracks.
Or it's a different day and you didn't listen to it when it came out.
That's a little presumptuous of me to assume that like as soon as the episodes go live, people download them and listen to them.
You do it for the nice people. Say it.
Oh, hi. Welcome to Offbeat Tracks.
Say happy Monday.
Oh, happy Monday. Thank you for listening to us.
And for the slackers in our listening, happy whatever day this is. Fine. Maybe you slacked enough to where it's a whole week later and now it's Monday again. Congratulations.
Loser. Now that we've insulted you for downloading our show, we're back with some more of our bread and butter this week. You know, the last time we did that Olympics album, and that was really, I think that was very true to our form. And I'm very happy to be doing what I think that we do best and discussing a single named dance pop artist. It's kind of our bread and butter, isn't it?
Yes.
So yeah, this week we're talking about Alisha, who was one of the first artists I discovered when I was started getting into like offbeat, like freestyle music when I was in college. Alisha, her real name is Alisha Ann Itkin. She was born in 1968 in Brooklyn, New York. The fourth of five children.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. Her dad was a New York Port Authority police officer, and she got discovered because her parents sent a demo tape of her singing with a band that was called the Babysitters. Alisha, I guess, was like their lead singer. She was 14 years old, and they sent a demo tape of her off to Vanguard, which was a label that was kind of like known for classical music or like big band. It's like an old people label, right?
Yeah.
And so producer Mark Berry, who worked for Vanguard, had this song called All Night Passion, and he needed a singer for this track. And he, I guess, heard this tape and saw dollar signs, and that's what happened.
This little 14-year-old with a big old voice.
That's right. I found an article from People Magazine from 1986. That is about her. The headline to this article is called
"Oh God."
Out of the New York club scene comes Alisha Ann Itkin, who may just be the next Madonna. Yeah, good call there, people.
Those are the worst articles to read now because it's always like the next Madonna or
right.
Yeah.
The first line of the article is she likes the cars, her boyfriend, and waffles with ice cream and hot fudge. Same, honey.
Wow. So is that the original lyrics to the cars that go boom?
She likes the cars with hot fudge. All right. So All Night Passion ends up being released in February of 1984. And this was a big hit. This was a number four hit on the dance chart. I think it hit in Europe as well.
Yeah, I think it was like 102 on like the Billboard charts.
It just missed the regular charts. But so I didn't realize until several years later, she was only 14.
I know, it's gross.
14 years old singing this song. Like, can you imagine if a producer did that now?
Okay, like, I feel that way about a lot of this music at the beginning of this. I've wrote this down a lot, and I'm like, cool, let's have a, you know, 15-year-old. Well, I guess she was probably, like, 16 by the time this was released. A 16-year-old, basically, I think this song is about sex addiction, if you ask me. Like,
no, I mean, just, she was 15 when this came out.
It's weird.
It is weird.
You can enjoy it. It's a good dance song. You're going to have fun listening to it. But just don't think about it enough because then you're going to be like, whoa, 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 whoa.
And actually, now that I'm just looking at these dates, she was born in April 68 and this song was released in February 84. So yeah, she was 15. That's just so weird. That's so weird.
It is weird.
And like, so the reason I brought up the People article, by the way, is that there's actually a quote about her age in it. Now, keep in mind, this was from right on the dawn of her second album. So this would have been 2 years later than that. So she's like 18 at this point, but still. The article says, her age is a selling point. The kids really relate to her, but she's different from Madonna. She has a different style. She's not a threatening presence. She's a regular kid.
She's not a threatening presence.
You know, and it's interesting to me to...
Does Madonna look like she's going to murder you? I hate the way people write about women.
Well, one reason I love going and finding these old articles is it's difficult, I think, when you come across somebody 20 years after their initial fame to kind of contextualize how they were perceived at that time.
I get that, yeah.
And so, like, I never would have thought of comparing Alisha and Madonna. So it's weird to me to see an article where all of that happens. But then, like, now that I see where they're like, okay, well, she's like the accessible Madonna, I get that. And it sort of makes sense, right? Because here you had Madonna, who was like she's kind of like how Lady Gaga is now, where it just seems like not a real person, right? Just sort of this entity that exists, like this person that is like too cool for Earth.
Yes.
And Alicia is just, she just looked like a kid who was in your class who like could sing and dance and had a record deal. And I totally get that. And so it still does not really excuse having a 15-year-old sing All Night Passion Gets Me Through the Day.
No, it doesn't.
But I guess I understand the branding of her as like the every woman, you know?
I guess. And also you have to deal with, if you're in this era, if you're a solo singer, you're getting compared to Madonna. Because I've seen a lot of articles where it's just, I'm like, that person is like so not Madonna. It's crazy. But because, you know, you have one woman who's just there.
Exactly.
You're now trying to be Madonna.
Exactly.
Which we still do as a society now today.
It's true. Still. Sometimes with Madonna, sometimes with other artists, but yes, you're right. It's like okay ladies, you got one famous person.
You get one.
Now every other woman is trying to be Madonna. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, kind of true, sure, sometimes me trying, but like, you know, right. You know, but still.
Anyway, so now that we've gotten all of that out, let's talk about the actual music. So All Night Passion, February 84. This is a good song. I mean, it really is a good song.
It's
like
cute,
the production on it is great. Alicia's debut album came out in 1985. And again, to reiterate what we were discussing a minute ago with this image of Alicia's Every Woman, like all these things started falling into place. Like when I realized that, like I went back and looked at the album cover and it's just like her on a very not glamorous bed. It's like, it's literally a day bed. It's like a brass day bed. And she's just like chilling on her bed. And
like a teenager daydreaming about her.
She literally is just a teenager. Boyfriend. That's the image they were going for. Mm-hmm. So I get that now.
Except for the title of this song, which also is very creepy for an underage person.
It is. Two Turned On is Alicia's next single. This was a number 6 hit on the dance charts, almost just as big as All Night Passion. Just kind of a mid-tempo dance pop number.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little club, little simple pop song to me. It's nothing special to me. It's just, I mean, if it's on, I'm dancing.
So we're now up to September of 1985, and Alicia drops what would be her biggest hit on the dance charts by any measure. Yeah, this was a number 1 hit, and this was actually a number 68 hit on the Hot 100 as well. It's called Baby Talk.
It's the bomb.
Yeah, it is the
bomb.
There's
a really good, I mean, the radio edit's fine, but there's a really good 12-inch of this that's just like...
Yes.
It's just like, it sounds like the regular song. It's not that much of a change, but it accentuates it just perfectly. And it's, it's so good. The video is awful.
They accentuate the drums better in the 12-inch cut. I agree.
The video is awful.
Oh, my God. The video.
Like, do they even pay actors?
I have so many questions about the video. So, like, it starts with her and her buddy, like, walking into an empty, like, dance hall. They're like, you know, super New York accents. They're like, girl, you're a star. This is all for you. And then so I guess, like, they flash. Then she's like, oh, is he coming? And Alicia's like, I don't know.
That's
so
the problem with women. We're successful. We can't enjoy our success because we're still waiting on little Tommy Douchebag over here.
Oh,
That is
Tommy
the feminist.
Douchebag. What a good name for him. He is Tommy Douchebag.
Yeah.
So then, like, flash forward, the song starts, like, the party is happening. Everybody's there. The band strikes up. Alicia comes out and sings Baby Talk. Tommy Douchebag is up, like, way up in the balcony.
Looking
like
miserable.
Looking
Why
like,
is he even
yeah,
there?
Looking
Why
like,
is he
oh,
there?
This is lame. I could be home playing Nintendo right now. But, like, I'm sorry.
I'm just imagining Tommy douchebag with the duck hunt gun.
Exactly. And I don't know. Then, like, the song ends and, like, Alicia, first of all, they threw this giant party for Alicia to come out and sing one song. Doesn't that seem a little odd to you? It was like, okay, good night. I'm like, wait, you just came out. No, you sang one song. This was an awful lot of fanfare for you to come out and sing one song, honey.
Yeah.
But she's running off the stage, and like the dude has now teleported from the balcony and is literally right there. He's almost like on the stage. And he's like, hey, she's literally waving goodbye to the fans. Yeah. And he's just right there. And he's like, hey, can we go somewhere and talk?
Yeah. No.
And she just gets this look on her face like, oh, thank goodness he's
here.
Yeah,
it's like the only thing. I've got people cheering for me. I didn't even say bye to them or thank you.
I'm like, you have a number one club hit. Fuck Tommy Douchebag.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. And I don't think it needed to happen on this video. Just have her up there performing. That's all you needed, because the rest of it is just distracting. And I'm just...
No, I appreciate it, though. But we have to be reminded that Alicia is a teenage girl just like you. And she... likes the same Tommy Douchebags that you like.
I didn't realize you meant the general you. I thought you meant me. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm a teenage girl. Yeah.
I meant the general you.
I know. It was confused me for a minute.
But the song itself, though, is a total banger. Yes,
oh, yeah, totally.
With you there. It's a great song.
100%.
Her band doesn't really seem to, like, fit her, but again... I kind of like, she sort of has like, you know, the art rock looking lady, and then dude who looks like he like performs with his church, like gospel, like plays keyboards at church. And he's got like I've never seen anybody wear a scarf with piano keys on it, except guys who play the keyboard for their church. They are the only ones who own those scarves. And the dude in her band has one, just saying.
That's pretty awesome. Also, another thing with the band that is unnecessary about that video, the fact that they sometimes just zoom in on people playing instruments that are not in the song.
Right.
There's like this whole synth line, and they're like, let's look at the guitarist playing this synth line.
Yes.
What? Why are... Just stop doing that. Go away. You didn't need to do that. Never try to talk.
We're going to talk about a couple more tracks off of this Alicia's debut album. Stargazing was the final single from it in 1986. It's a pretty mild song.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty forgettable.
It's a slower, kind of funkier beat to it. It's not as like that upbeat club banger, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's good. It's fine.
And then I wanted to talk about the B-side to Stargazing, which is called Boys Will Be Boys. This is such teen pop nonsense.
Oh my god, it's so cute. Bouncy nonsense. I don't really know what that means, but it's just a cute little bouncy pop song.
It is. So we move up to Alicia's second album, Night Walkin', which is a very, very underrated album, in my opinion.
Yeah.
This was like where Alicia was trying to move away from, I guess, being seen as a club singer and like tried to cross into like more mainstream pop. And this was also produced by Mark S. Berry, the same guy who produced her first album. But again, we're trying to transition toward more of a mainstream pop sound. So the first single from it is called Into My Secret, and it's released in August of 1987. I absolutely adore this song.
It ages into 87 so well.
It really does.
It's so good and perfect. I really like it a lot.
It was only a number 97 hit.
Which is crazy to me. But I don't know. Maybe it's promotion.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I think it fits perfectly with everything that's happening
there. She did have another hit in the clubs, though, with this. It was number 9 on the club charts. But yeah, I mean, just this is perfect, like 1987 teen pop. And so I am baffled by why this wasn't a bigger hit.
I agree with you.
The second single is I Don't Know What Comes Over Me. Some really cool composition here, some neat key changes, and it did not chart at all.
See, this one doesn't, like, I don't hate it, and I'm, like, listening to it, and it's not boring, but it still kind of just doesn't have something for me. Like, it kind of fades in the background still a little for me.
I'm going to say...
I don't know. It doesn't spark enough for me. Like, I kind of see it why it wasn't more of a hit on this one. It's fine. I don't hate it, but... I don't know. It just doesn't have a thing where I'm just like, I need to hear that again.
I'm going to say I think that this would have been a huge hit if it had been released by Miami Sound Machine.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that. Oh, yeah. Well.
That's all I'm saying. Like, the composition of the song, it works. So, I do not know what America will not accept about Alicia. I don't get it. She's making some good music, people, and you ignored her. And then we come up to Let Your Heart Make Up Your Mind, which was a number 23 hit on the dance charts. Not as big as previous singles, but still, you know, charted and was a hit. This sounded like an exposé song to me.
A little bit, but it still faded in the back to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not one of her more memorable ones. And it's not because I didn't hate it. Like, when I was listening to it, I was like, this is fine. It's cool. But it just didn't grab me. I never need to hear it again. I zoned.
Okay, so if you're asking right now, well, why did you say this album was underrated and you've talked about the last two songs like, eh, well, because now we're getting to the good stuff, the album cuts, or as I would prefer to call them, the stuff that she should have released as singles, beginning with Do You Dream About Me, which was on the soundtrack to Mannequin. Why this wasn't a proper single, I don't know, but come on. Diane Warren. She got a Diane Warren song on this album. Again, this should have been a huge hit.
That lovely, like, early Diane Warren where she does things that aren't ballads, and it's like, oh my God.
Yes, exactly.
I loved it. I love it so God.
Get,
much.
How do we get Diane Warren to make upbeat pop music again?
I don't know. She kind of scares me. I don't want to ask her to do anything.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like we should, like, not... we just let her do her... I feel like I could not... ask her to do anything. She'll just get there if she wants to. She knows. But I love it. Like, that little... It's just perfect. And it's so perfectly Diane Warren, like, coming out of that bridge and that little key change into the chorus. Oh, I love a key change. I don't know why Diane does that to me.
Diane loves the key change. Gosh. And I'm so baffled by why this was not a single. Because you had it in a movie that I think was, like, a decently popular movie.
I feel like
Mannequin.
It is.
I mean, I don't... you know, I've never seen it. Not my thing. But... like, there's people have, like, made, I don't know if there was, like, an official music video released to this, but there are clips, like, of that essentially are the movie, like, with the song over it. So I don't know. Again, should have been a hit.
You tell me there's no other baby. You tell me I'm the only one. I wish I knew.
I also definitely wanted to talk about the title track, Night Walkin', because I thought this was actually kind of a risky song for her. It's more down tempo, but it's like it's down tempo pop. It's not a ballad. It's just kind of a down tempo more. And I feel like she gets real kind of gritty on this. And
she does. It's sad lyrics.
It works though.
It's not like cheesy sad lyrics either. Like it kind of has a little bit of edge to it.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
This is almost a sad song that sounds happy because it's so close to being happy sounding. If she just gets one little tiny, like you just need one little higher synth riff, not even a ton of it. Okay. And then you've got a great sad song that sounds happy. Yeah. I mean, this is really different. I'm surprised to hear this, but.
It is. I think it is very different than any other song she ever did on any album.
Yes, 100%.
And I think, again, should have been a single. And finally, Play With Boys. I just happen to like this song.
Any song she writes about boys in the title, super cute. Like, it's just so cute and fun, and it's fine. I feel like she should maybe think about doing more with her life than just playing with boys. But like,
she was only 17, 18 during the production of this, so.
I thought she'd learn something from Tommy Douchebag.
Duh, you Tommy Douchebag. Tommy Douchebag! I had no friends to play with. Now we're going to move up to Alicia's third album from 1990, which was called Bounce Back. And as a matter of fact, indeed she did, just yes, a little bit.
It's really foretelling.
The first single, the title track, winds up being her biggest Billboard chart hit ever, for the Hot 100 anyway. This was a number 54 on the Hot 100 and a number 10 on the dance charts. This should have been number one everywhere, though. This song is awesome. Are you kidding me?
I'm trying to think of what was like on the charts at the same time, and I'm hoping that it was just like... Amy Grant's Baby Baby was just number one everywhere forever.
That was the next year.
That was 90, isn't
it? Baby Baby was 91.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, Baby Baby is a great song. We're not talking about that, but no. It is perfect.
It is perfect. It is the most perfect pop song ever written.
Bounce Back is like, it's so good. It's an early dance party track for us in like 2004.
Yes. So
this was on everything.
That's true. So this actually is a cover. And Alicia's version is better, for the record, but it was originally done by a group called Fire on Blonde, who never had a proper album, best I can tell, but they worked a lot with producer Michael Jay, who we talked about during the Martika episode, because he was like Martika's producer on her first big breakthrough album in 89. So here's a clip of Fire on Blonde doing their version of Bounce Back, the Michael Jay production. Anyway, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know why I cut off like that.
and then just went, anyway.
Yeah, sorry. I literally have no idea why I cut off like that. Anyway, their version's good. It's very 1987.
We also, on the Martika episode, played, remember she had a version of it.
Yes.
That they gave to her as she performed on a thing. So
exactly. So this is now the third version of Bounce Back that we've had. And Alicia's,
there anymore.
Alicia's is the best.
I think Alicia's is the best.
It really is.
I think they all kind of sound the same. They don't really make it go that different.
I don't know. I mean, to me, the drum production is really what steps up Alicia's version.
Yeah, it's...
And I just remembered doing the Martika one. Wasn't that when the clip that she was on like a real
Entertainment 8?
A weird public access show and this like Creepy McCreeperson hosting it?
I think that might be the same clip. Oh, what a classic.
Yeah, I think that's when she performed Bounce Back.
I hope that never happened to you, Alicia.
Need someone who can hold on, better face your feelings, never hide your heart. So the album itself did not do that great. It was number 160 in the US. And oh my God, I'm so excited to talk about this second single because I love this song. Wrong Number. This is so 80s. I know we're in 1990.
Well, because we love a dance song with a telephone
montage
in it. But some phone puns there, all over it.
There is something that set this one apart, and I'm going to get there. But this one, I'm going, man, this sounds like awfully 80s. And I was just like, maybe it's just because this was Alicia's sound. But I looked, and Michael J. wrote this one, too. And guess who also recorded a version of it first?
Martika.
Nope. Fire on Blonde. Fire on. Again, did Wrong Number. So here's a piece of their version. So, yep, there's Fire on Blonde doing Wrong Number.
I think Michael J. has like 5 songs that he wrote in like 1983. And so every time someone calls him, he's like, how about this one? And he's just pretending like he's done any work in the last decade. But really, he's just got
like,
the same.
So let's look at the concept of Wrong Number. It is like, this is just, I think this might actually be the most 80s song ever written, right? So automatically a song about telephones makes it super 80s. But also the idea is that someone like calls a wrong number, which is a concept that is like barely understandable, I think,
too. Super cute.
Like, you know, answering the phone, ringing at your house and it's the wrong number. But then like this person, the singer is so desperate that they have decided they've now fallen in love with whoever this person is that has misdialed their home. Honey, value yourself. Like, I don't know what else to say. It's just, what? How long do you talk to somebody on the phone is a wrong number? 15 seconds tops? Like, and you've decided you're in love with him?
It was a very lonely concept. Like, it's sad. Yeah, it's
like,
funny.
I mean, it's like, even like Kathy from the comic strip would be like, yeah, maybe rope it in a little lady.
My personal favorite part of this whole thing is when the middle, like the little bridge where she's like talking to the operator because... She's talking to the operator.
Oh, yes. Thank you for bringing that up.
And I just love this concept. She's like, I know I got the wrong number, but now I want the right lover. If somebody said that to me, if I was a telephone operator, I'd be like, okay. It's like the Twitter thing when people are like yelling about something and go, sir, this is an Arby's. That's what it sounds like.
Exactly. Exactly. Alicia, this is an Arby's. The lady on the other end, like, ma'am, you've dialed Arby's.
ma'am, do you want that roast beef sandwich or not?
Yeah, like, she should have gone like the Midnight Star / Yazoo route of like actually calling an operator and like putting an annoyed operator in the finished track, like both of them did. That would have really that would have made this the ultimate like phone pop song, right?
Yeah, it's a
phone pop. It's a subgenre. I have to make a comment too about Alicia's version. So Alicia's version and the Fire on Blonde version are almost identical for the first like couple of verses. But then, yeah, Alicia gets this breakdown like you're talking about. But then they do something so cool after that that I've never heard any other phone song specifically do. So there are other songs like Gloria Estefan's like Sex in the 90s is one that I can think of where like, oh, and the 12-inch cut of the Jets' Private Number does this also where like you actually hear touch tone phones being dialed. Yeah. But this one does something that I've never heard any of those other songs do, and that is they actually play a melody with the touch tones. So listen to this. That's so cool! How do you not love the hell out of that, man?
It's very... If you didn't know that there were phones being talked about, here's another hint.
I've never heard any of them actually like specifically play a melody, and I just thought that was so cool. So Alicia's 1996 single, Wherever the Rhythm Takes Me, is just kind of this random one-off thing she threw out in the ether in 1996. I hate to say this, but I think this is probably her most forgettable song. It's just straight up like mid-90s Eurodance, Euro House.
Like the 1996 jumped all the way out. Uh-huh. It is just, and it's like distracting. Like, it's fine. If I'm going to dance to it, if I'm in a 1996 dance party, cool, I'll dance. But it's just like distracting. It's so cookie cutter in a way.
Ending on what I feel is a very you note, we get to 1999's You Want to Be a Star, Superstar, from the film of the same title. I think, was the film called Superstar? Yeah.
I've been meaning, so I keep forgetting to watch it for the last 20 years. Like maybe everyone else did too, I think.
Yeah, so this was Shannon, what was
Molly
her name?
Shannon.
Molly Shannon, thank you. Molly Shannon's character from Saturday Night Live.
Mary Catherine Gallagher.
Mary Catherine Gallagher, who would smell her hands after sticking them in her armpits, and
it's a very weird thing, but it was
would
funny.
You know, fuck trees. I don't what else she did. I don't
she's
know.
She's a little Catholic schoolgirl.
Saturday Night Live is just not a very good show. Sorry.
Aww.
But anyway, yes, they somehow stretched that character into a movie. And here we are. And Alicia did the, I guess, the theme song from it.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to call it the theme song.
Produced by
your man.
Husband. Jelly Bean
Your husband, your man's
is. But 1999 Jelly Bean, so it's like.
Yeah, but it's still Jelly Bean.
Yeah, I mean, you can still hear, like,
it's still very 90s.
It's a very 90s song. There's
I totally
nothing
get
80s
it.
About it. It is very, like, 1999 right here.
I totally get it. This 80s is, Jelly Bean is, or 90s Jelly Bean is still Jelly Bean,
it's
yes.
Like if 1999 had freestyle music and Jelly Bean was doing it, you can hear it a little bit in there.
Yeah, sure,
it's still
sure.
there,
sure.
But it's a song that would be the theme for Superstar. Take that as you will.
So I'll be honest, I have no idea what Alicia is up to now. There is no information about her.
Okay. I know her married name now. It's Alicia Cinnamon? Cinnamon? It's like cinnamon, but with one N.
Oh.
It sounds fake, but it's real.
Who's she married to?
This guy whose name is Mark. I think he's a gym teacher in New York.
There you go.
She is a very, like, 50-year-old Long Island housewife life, it looks like. I don't know if she's like working,
well, good for her.
But it's
she's,
like it's like that perfect, like she's that's earned what that. I hoped
and
that it was.
I she's earned that, and I genuinely mean that.
Oh, I did.
And
I
not
did
in
find
a sarcastic
a
way, because I think that I cannot imagine being 14, 15 years old and being thrown onto television performances in Germany or New York or wherever, singing All Night Passion Gets Me Through the Day. I mean, that's not an easy thing to go through, I think, for anybody. And so I respect the hell out of Alicia. I really do.
I think it's the bomb.
And
that's
she,
what I want.
She did make some incredible music, and I'm extremely grateful.
I found this picture that somebody posted under her married name from 2015, a fan.
Oh, so that's cute.
Doesn't she look like, she looks like if Alicia were 50 years old,
yep,
as a Long Island.
She still looks just the same,
family,
yes,
lady. It's it's perfect.
Yeah, you should post that picture. We'll tweet it. How about that?
We'll tweet it.
We'll tweet this photo of Alicia. So our Twitter, by the way, is at Offbeat Tracks.
Yes, and we have all of our old episodes and stuff like that on our website at offbeattrackscast.com.
That's it.
I almost said our Twitter again. Yes. Ooh, the internets.
That's all right. Stay warm out there, and yes, we will see you again soon.
We sure will.